My name is Seamus Nolan. I'm an artist. I was invited by Upstate Theatre Projects to come to Drogheda and maybe work on developing a project. I visited the town a lot and went to Millmount a lot and learned about the history and the official histories and the visible histories. But it was in conversation with Declan Mallon, the director. He told me about the wall on the way up to Balls Grove, which had been uncovered. When they pulled back the ivy, there was a Balls Grove Boot Boys symbol, the V with the three Bs. So we started discussing this kind of history, this secret history, or untold kind of history, not so much with the Boot Boys, but following on from the Boot Boys, the punk movement, and how it affected Drogheda and its legacy and history. And so, yeah, we decided to maybe speak with some people, find out the history and see what might happen. For myself, I'm kind of interested in punk a lot, and I'm interested in how punk is kind of a model for a kind of a critical sort of cultural production and how effective that is. Art and punk, they're very, very closely related to me. The criticality that's involved, how it's such a visual culture, music is central to it as well. I just wanted to investigate a little bit further how punk affected people in Drogheda and what came from it and what has continued to come from it.
I don't know. I know I was a punk for a very short time. I thought it was a punk for much longer. And I was just thinking about it. I was only a punk for 4 months, really.
All right.
And I'd say there was a guy called Dip Trainer who could have been the first punk. It could have been me, it could have been him. I don't know. Around about the same time, a few people began to become punks. You see, I suppose you could have been a... I tried to look like a punk. And maybe there were people who were punks and they didn't specifically as... Mm. You know, look, if you say that's a punk, but they were punks, you know, because you didn't need to be a certain kind of identikit punk.
Yeah,
it was quite late. I mean, like, it was 79 that I became a punk. So from 76, I saw some punks. I was working in London. I saw some punks on the King's Road. I thought, wow, Jesus Christ. And I find that if you want to find facts about what's happening, read the Daily Mail, because I happened to find a thing on a newspaper on a train. So something is spreading across suburbia, some terrible thing of young people, and it described punks in its over 2-page spread and what it was. Oh, jeez, that's amazing.
Well, you tried it just for once, found it all right for kicks, but now you find out that it's a habit that sticks, and you're an orgasmatic. You're an orgasmatic. Sticking in the back door with dirty magazines, so your mother wants to know what all the things on the jeans, but you're an orgasmatic. You're an orgasmatic. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I was working in America in 77, and I came back, and suddenly they were on Top of the Pops, there were punks, and Anarchy in the UK had been number one and all that. And on Top of the Pops, you were sort of seeing the Stranglers and bands like Johnny, what do you call it, Billy Idol people. And so it was all there immediately then, and that's when I heard about the punks in Dundalk there. And a lot of people who became punks were quite old. I was 23, like, you know, it wasn't like I was 16 or something. Mm. So by the time the mania died down by that summer, I suppose I was a punk from about February to petered out during summer. I was working in other things. I kind of got, they took over, you know. Mm. I suppose it was just the moment. I mean, a couple of years before I'd been saying I was a punk, but I wasn't.
Right.
I was just drunk, yeah. Well, it's when I started dressing like a punk and coming out with punk shite. You know, coming out, you know, I suppose identifying as a punk, or, I'd certainly say 6 months earlier I wasn't looking, behaving, you know, or it was something to try and live up to, you see. I mean, if you were going around looking somewhat punk-like, you had to kind of be doing things to match, you had to walk, you know, you had to...
Talk the talk.
Yeah, exactly, you had to do stuff. So, you know, it was sort of a mania that I had, and that was a wonderful opportunity. I mean, I just thought it was such a fantastic thing, and like you could just, anarchy and chaos seemed very exciting and great fun, and seize the moment and, you know, go and create some more or enjoy it. But I wasn't drinking, and I'd go dancing or whatever, and if, you know, on the way home we'd always be looking for something. But we went out to the country, and we, for some reason, we stole a lot of hens, and then we set them loose in the church. Oh, no, I did. I kind of organized all this. But Mass on Sunday morning. I hear people talking about they felt the church was very oppressive. I knew it was. But it didn't bother me. I wasn't interested in the church, really. But it just seemed like it wasn't an act against the church as such. It was just kind of an act against older people, I suppose. I felt like it was something in my mind was like, you know, Jesus cast the Pharisees out, like, fuck the chicken. They were actually hens. Like, I remember going to Dublin with some pals of mine, and we'd go up to, say, like, the No Romance shop, and with a few record stores and stuff, and we'd just go up for the day out and, you know, see what was up. I remember there was a cafe, rather like McDonald's, but in Talbot Street. And it was kind of like a hamburger place, which was fairly new in those days. I think there was only one McDonald's in Ireland. Oh, no, there was one in Cork as well. But anyway, for some reason, I got into a fight with a fellow customer. This was like in daylight. Something to do with him not liking punks, you know what I mean? So I got into a fight with him, and it was quite a serious fight, but I went to hit him with a chair, because that was the only way I could save myself from getting hurt. But the chairs were actually bolted to the floor, because it was obviously a place where this might have happened before.
Okay.
Because I think he was biting me on the cheek, which was very sore. So I went to pick up that. And then, for some reason, the fight stopped, and we just both burst out laughing and thought it was very funny and wasn't that great fun. It was all a bit like that. It was all a bit haphazard. Anarchy before I was a punk. I wouldn't be into anarchy now. I was in an Italian cafe 5 years ago. I was working teaching English, and they had an anarchist cafe. It was a cafe, I was working in Naples, and there was a cafe just, it was run by it was run by some anarchist group, and they had these wonderful kind of newsletters and stuff that I used to read, and they'd like sort of say, don't cooperate with the enemy. Don't buy stuff, you know, stuff like that. So I find that sometimes laughable because it happened to hope, but also very interesting and very, very strong. And I think punk seems to be a chance of disorganized anarchy, and that's the type I liked, I suppose, yeah. I started writing then. I've been writing for a long time, and... So, and then I started doing art about 10 years ago. And, but none of it's really punk. Punk is very important as far as I'm concerned, but, but there was a time in Jordan when there were a lot of bands starting, and that was a little bit later. And I was working with horses, so that's even more of a session. And so I was away and doing that, and so I missed all the kind of flourishment of that, you know. I tell you what really, really made an impression on me, and I thought was real kind of a punk thing, was the Project Art Centre, the 24-hour gig there, which was fantastic. And that's the first time I saw the Virgin Prunes, and they were just amazing. And that was really something else. And, you know, that wasn't just it was in awe of them, and they were just amazing.
Did you stay for the entire 24 hours?
Off and on, yeah. I don't think we did. No, I wouldn't. We didn't. No, I don't think so. No. I would have. But I saw a lot of bands. I think I saw U2. I never really liked U2. I saw Protex. There was a band from England. The whole thing that was public, Johnny Lydon was supposed to come, but he got arrested on the boat. Mm. And so that's why I went there. And then I met some punks from Drawda who were there, and so became pals with them then later on. So it was a great gig.
Do you remember, like,
a lot of the people, my image of the Project Art Centre at that time was long hair, balding people with long hair. And so I suppose they saw this thing coming along and they thought it was definitely wasn't like an art thing. It was all punks were at it, and it was a gig. It was very much a gig. Yeah. But it was, I suppose, being run by an art centre of that nature, of that kind of calibre, they said, well, let's run it for 24 hours. It was very basic like that. There was always a lot of, you're not a true punk. There was always a lot of that. And there was always the question, every week, in the NME, which was kind of your insight, or whatever, in all the sort of punk music, there was always, is punk dead? Is punk dead? You know, like this was in like 78, they were saying, this is punk dead.
Another cheap product for the consumer's head. Bubblegum rock on plastic transistors. School voice edition backed by big time promoters. CBS promoted the Clash, but not for revolution.
You were in the Frustrate bars?
Yeah. Bottle of vodka before the first gig, and bottle of vodka before the second one, that was it. The second one we only done because we were throwing out Joey Miles. They told us we were bad, so we knew there was a punk group coming. So we got in touch with somebody who got in touch with somebody else, and we got to become the support. So we walked in, and Joey said, "You're bad." And he said, "No, we're a support group." I bought a pair of red skin tight plastic pants. I think we're about 5 up. And we're going to a gig, absolutely with Zip, but a few of Lolo's. I think we're in Boomtown Rats. And we're well pissed at the stage on Sunday morning. And I came out of the changing room giving out a fuck because they'd no Zip in them. And everyone was shocked around the place laughing. I had to be inside out. At the beginning, we used to go to the Bunch of Grapes. There was a restaurant in Stephen's Green Centre's there now.
Oh, yeah, the
Dandelion. It was a little restaurant there. And we used to go up there for the gigs on a Saturday and a Sunday afternoon. And the gigs would finish around 5, and the place would close around 6. But the Bunch of Grapes, they'd give us food. We'd go in, buy a bottle of wine, and any beer that was left over, they'd give it to us. They got rid of that wine and that food. We came home full and happy. But even we used to, I don't think we ever go into any hassle anyway. You know, like Advance Records in Dublin, they used to be only skinheads on a Saturday afternoon. We got up and stroll in there, and they kind of knew us and just left us alone. Like the Black Catholics in Dublin, some of them knew at gigs would start trouble. That gig you were saying in the supermarket with, oh, the Outcasts, they got to the front, started trouble, and the band literally hit them with the guitars, beat the crap out of them, threw them out, and start again.
I was the only teddy boy in this town. Punk for me was a springboard. And punk in itself lasted, you know, it was an explosion. It was 18 months, 2 years, tops really. It was 76, it started in England in 76. So I think it was only the fighting with the Teds in 77, you see. That's gave it a kind of a big, big, massive PR. Like, who are the punks and who are the Teds, you know what I mean? And of course, punk's been youth culture. Then again, you realise they called kids in the 50s in America punks, yeah. You know, people like Jerry Lee Lewis and them, they were called punks, yeah. Rock and roll was seen as punk music. They actually called it punk music. You know, or you did punk being used in the 70s was probably the reason as well, because there was the connection to rock and roll, the 3 minute song. Just going on 17 when we got into a band. Was during the punk, it was 77 through to 79, that's when I got into singing in bands. The influence was there already, because people I knew, like, making the bands, was people you seen, you always getting bands and stuff, you know what I mean? But you didn't know how to get them together, because I didn't play guitar. So, and it came, the first band we gave it was by fluke. I was walking on a yacht scheme, just when I turned 17, I got, one of those YTS schemes. Okay, yeah, they had to go on, you know, if you were unemployed. And it was a plaster, and he basically pointed out, he said, you know, you sing all the time. I didn't realise I sang. Constantly, as I'm sweeping up and shit, I was just constantly singing whatever, I don't know what, every song I probably just. And he said, oh, my brother plays guitar. And that's basically.
That was it.
And that was it. That was basically my entrance into singing in bands, you know what I mean? Shitting yourself the first couple of gigs, but we busked originally. We did some busking outside St. Peter's Church. Right,
just the break. Originally.
Yeah, just because you just thought, well, let's see how we sound. So yeah, it's good from what I said, punk, but that was all. Around the same the point of that, because it was an explosion. The punk was an explosion. It wasn't. You felt it pertained to you. You know, whatever did it, you felt that was something to do with you, because it was about, the word youth was used a lot, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Youth and young people, youth and young youth. Oh, that's, I'm, you know, if nothing else, I'm certainly one of them.
Yeah, I'm going home to see. Lord, don't you know she really loves me? Well, don't you know that she's my girl? Going home to see my baby. Yeah, I'm going home to see my girl. Oh,
When we were growing up in this town, times were hard. Times were really hard. But there was always somewhere to go. There was always, except for disco, you avoided the disco and you went, you had Johnny Connors, the boxing club. That was like an icon in this town at the time for what we did. Right? I was never a musician. I was mostly involved in production, like sound and lighting.
Okay.
Not so much in this town, more later in my life. But what I grew up with the boys here, was what put me doing what I did then.
Yeah.
It was the music and the culture and the comradeship. Like, we were rockabillies, right? But we still got on with the punks. We still went out with the punks. We still went out with the rockers. We still went out with the mods. Because it's such a small town, you didn't have much of a choice. And we actually all got on. Now, don't get me wrong, we took the piss out of each other, right, left and centre. But we all get on together, you know?
Yeah.
And even to this day, we still all meet each other. And do you mean, that's just how we were.
Yeah,
you know, you didn't have much of anything, to be honest with you. Like, you'd meet your mates and... Right, you might have a few extra bob, right, hang on, we get you into the boxing club with that, and you split it up, and you looked after each other, and it was more than friendship, it was like a comradeship. You know, no matter what music taste you had, everyone wanted to be in the boxing club every week, so you looked after everyone, and made sure they were in the boxing club, or wherever.
Yeah.
Wherever there was a gig playing, or a band playing, or, you know, everybody made sure that everybody else got there to see it. You had the punk thing, and you had the rock and roll thing, and then you had the rock and roll guys slagging off the rockabilly guys. So the rockabilly guys started to really pump it up and play it to the punk guys, who loved it. But you're still playing the same chords, only at a higher speed.
Different attitude.
It's a different attitude at a higher speed.
Yeah.
That's where you got the likes of the Stray Cats, initially, and the rockabilly. And then it came in when you had the Cramps, the Meteors, and bands like that. They came in and they wiped it out. And the punk guys loved this. Like, you didn't have to have a mohawk and pins through your face. You could have a quiff and beetle creeper shoes. You know, it was defining yourself through not just music, but a lifestyle.
Draw to 77, there was a lot of energy in the town, and there was a lot of religion in the town. There was a lot of conservatism in the town. There was a lot of pressure. There was not much freedom and sexuality within fashion before punk, we're talking. There was On Top of the Pops, as in glam rock and in the Safe Disco, David Cassidy, Basic Rollers. I'm starting at glam rock, but you look at history of music, say 10 years before, you've 67. They say, some punks say, the hippies did do it for them, and they stepped a few steps up to lead to freedom and freedom from conservative America and so on. And I would agree with that, because Woodstock and so on was a freedom of individual thought, individual music, Jimi Hendrix, Johnny Cash. The Beatles, in a way, Rolling Stones especially, were very much a gender to look up to, or a gender to, in a sense, disagree with or to challenge. So all generations within music genres or within fashion genres, or an image, as in my world, photography, would be challenging, because all youth from 13, from teens to 19 or a little bit after that, Some people go on to 55, like me at the moment, and they're still radical in some way. But what I'm trying to say is, you challenge during your teenage years, and you will always challenge and disagree. You question. You're in a questioning development within your brain or your... But whatever comes along, you're a sponge at 17. When I was 17, punk hit the streets, and I was totally influenced by it, and I was absorbed by it. I was 17, and I was working class from Baldsgrove in Drogheda, and I, from a big family, I'm this oldest son, and things were tough. Beans on toast for tea. My mother and father had 7 kids in 10 years. I worked in the timber yard in Drogheda McMartins, where I live across the road from on the Marsh Road now. Out in all weathers, 10 years helping on the lorry delivering timber. So my world was, I worked 50% of the town in 77, hadn't got a job. The punk rock days and what was said from the Sex Pistols, the Clash, how it affected me at the time, how we drank cider, took mushrooms down the green, Donors Green down at the bridge, how we walked the bridge, got up and walked up on the railway bridge full of mushrooms and cider, how we are alive today because of that, I don't know. We challenged everything that was in front of us. So back to 77. You had lots of local bands. I wasn't a musician, I wasn't in a band. I was a dancer. I had a lot of radical thought, I was very verbal. I was a party man, and I was part of the group. The Subterranea was a gig where Roger Roden ran
here in Drogheda.
Yeah, just at the Tonsil, it was beside the AOH, which is now, I think, a casino, just to the right as you go down Shop Street. Roger and Mary Roden, Roger Riley, Roger had parents at a cafe in Narrow West Street to Carlton, and Roger set up the Subterranea, and it was very, very interesting before the Dance Factory and then the Boxing Club. Yeah. In 77 in Drogheda, it was very hard to open up and to say what you felt. All I wanted to say in 17 was, I am free to say what I like to say on my own at any time. And that's all we really wanted to say. That was actually very, very difficult to say. The Sex Pistols, the Clash, they were saying what they wanted to say. We jumped on that bandwagon, and we totally absorbed that at 17, 18 years of age to become punk, mentally and physically to become punk. We some of us wore badges and Mohican, but we became mentally punk. We related to this, especially because of the conservatism within a highly conservative republic. So just the freedom to verbally and to do what you want, to not to cause a lot of trouble, really, initially, but there was a lot of trouble and fights and so on with punk. You asked another question. Do you see punk as something you left behind or something you carried with you beyond the obvious styles and genres, attitudes? When I was 17, at the age of 17 years of age in 77, in a small town in Ireland, and punk broke out all over the place, it's with you in mind and body for the rest of your life. There was quite a few hundred involved in the punk scene in Drogheda. Very strong music scene. Stiff Little Fingers came here. Virgin Prunes, as you see, came here. I was at the, I quoted on that on Facebook today. Amazing gig. Gavin Friday. Amazing artists, multimedia artists wearing skirts. Googies, artists. Mineral Bar at a Virgin Prunes gig. Where would you get it? Only in Drogheda. Mm-hmm. You know, laws at B, no beer. 10 o'clock start, doors open, Mineral Bar. Mm-hmm. Very funny. Another funny moment was when you two came,
they were...
born again Christians.
Were they?
And three of the members of U2, I would say, very much came down through the new way, the born again movement, for a meeting in... it was a cafe we all went to, in a basement at the end of Narrow West Street. You'll get the name off someone else. I can just, my brain's gone. And they had a meeting with people who were born again here, but that exploded. So what was really funny was we walked across West Street posing at 17, 18 years of age. I stood around the tonsil in my what do you call it, a year later. But for a good 5 years from that moment, you two came down and met the small group of new born again Christians. 50 people became born again Christians who were my friends, who were punk rockers, who had a radical thought, who were individuals, and they were like a group of sheep on one side of West Street, and they moved up and down West Street showing how individual they are from the influence from punk, but they were all praying together up and down West Street, and we were on the other side and we were slagging them, and we were purposely walking up and down West Street, and they were purposely walking on the other footpath, and we were shouting over each other, fucking born again, fucking Egypts, and God is fucking shy. And they were shouting over, punk is, come pray with us, come join us, and trying to convince us. It was a funny moment.
What was Drogheda like at the time?
It was very dark. It was kind of dark in the place. Like, a lot of the industries, like, you can imagine where Scotch Hall is now, was, there was a bus depot there, and it was old, abandoned factories. It was a very dark, kind of grey sort of place. Mm. But I didn't realise that then, you know, it's just what you grew up with. But if you wore anything out of the, everybody looked the same. I thought everybody looked the same anyway. Even if you wore drainpipe trousers, yeah, or brothel creepers or something like that, you were just from a different planet. You know, there might be five or six fellas that I would go around with. And even if you just went to a disco and you had a big old coat on you or something like that, you were just like fucking from Mars.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? You didn't have to have safety pins through your nose or anything like that, or dog collars. Well, some people wore them, but like most people got closer. There was a second hand shop just here in West Street, just down there, And some of my mates who were kind of into metal would be out, and here comes the fella who wears the dead men's clothes. But,
old suits and things.
Old suits, old coats, old jumpers, things like that. You know? I'm sure there was other people, you know, the people who are into metal have their views on, but it's just, like as I said in there, like, there wasn't a standard look. Because I used to go up to Dublin a fair bit and kind of hang around Stephen's Green. There was an open market there, the Dandelion Market.
Yeah.
And you could go in, it was a covered market, and on the back of the bands used to play there. I didn't see that many bands there. But there was a shop in there called No Romance. They used to sell a lot of punk gear. But even that was way out of price for anybody, you know. But even the people used to, I think it was Advanced Records that was in the street opposite, but you know the theatre there, the Olympian?
The Gaiety.
Well, it was just opposite that. That's where that record shop was. And people used to hang around the front of it. And they were all friends with the Virgin Prunes, and you know, you'd see people that you would see at gig, they would be hanging around there, you know. But there was no drink or no drugs or anything. It was just people to go up and just to get records. And I used to go to Newry to buy records, because the records that would be released on a Friday, they'd have them in Newry on a Saturday morning.
Okay.
So we used to go up in these bus. They used to have buses used to run from Drogheda to get cheap butter.
Mm.
To be big price change between the butter here and the butter in the north. So busloads of housewives used to go up to buy butter, and I'd be sitting in the middle of them to buy the latest punk records. You'd get the Enemy, Sounds, Melody Maker, and you would read the reviews, you would read live reviews, you would read record releases. Just, like, I remember an Enemy, and it was Sex Pistols on the front of it, and there was a caption on top, and Sex Pistols were in the 4th, 2nd, 3rd, 16th, 23rd, 50th page. It was just all of it then.
Yeah.
And I just thought they were brilliant. John Peel. So John Peel could play the Damned, or he could play the Sex Pistols, or he could play a reggae record, or he could play, you know, a very eclectic band. But then with Radio Luxembourg as well, I distinctly remember recording an interview with the Sex Pistols. There was this sounds like from the 50s or something, but it's true. There was a company called Peter Stuyvesant, they were a cigarette company, and they would have their program, you know what I mean? And they advertised cigarettes in it. But I can't remember. He was an English DJ, but he was working for Radio Luxembourg, and he had an interview with the Sex Pistols, because they couldn't play anywhere in England.
Yeah.
And I had old front loader, you put the cassette in the top, and you close it, pushed up to the radio, and I had recorded, so I could listen to it again, you know? Yeah. I just thought having this head was just gospel.
Yeah.
You know? I think the more aware I became from listening to music and meeting different people who were into music, the music did opened up my mind completely to everything.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? To everything. You know, I wouldn't have been politically aware or anything. I never read books. I was never in a club or anything. I was never in the Scouts or anything. I just, music. There's a snooker club, it's gone now, on the far side of town, St Mary's Snooker Hall. It's up near the old folks' home. It's in a place, it's called Poorhouse Lane. It's in the real old part of Drogheda. But there was a snooker club on the top, a room with a snooker table in it. But they had a room underneath it that was empty. And we used to rent that, I think it was £2 or £3 a week, between about 20 of us.
Yeah.
And we put carpet on the floor, and the boys, some of these lads I used to, were from Ball Throat, just up there, but they were into heavy metal, they were into Deep Purple and
yeah.
stuff stuff like that, deep folk would put it, and Judas Priest, they all loved heavy metal, and I used to go listen to it too, you know, it was on, but I punk out soon again. Anyway, they had instruments, and we decided we had a punk band called The Sust, or we never.
Didn't get out of practice
room. We never even got out of the practice room, but we should just, we started to drink then a bit. We'd all get drunk, and then we'd mess around. It was great fun. We had a record player there. We were all at our own keys, so we could come and go. It was like a clubhouse. Everybody was carrying around guitars then, and drums, and you'd see, it went from people carrying around records to people carrying around instruments. And we were kind of blessed in Drogheda. There was a place, the boxing club, where pit bands could play. It was some Sundays, there might be something on a Sunday afternoon, and it'd be maybe 10 bands playing on it, and you just go along, and they might play once, they never play again. But the fact that they tried is the main thing, you know.
Feeling life is a problem for you to solve. I don't need all this pressure on this wayward life of mine. Cause hell goes high, hell goes high, hell goes high, hell goes high.
You were at the Dark Spaces.
That's where I met Paddy Dillon.
That's where you met him, isn't it?
I met us before. I didn't even know, never met him before in my life. We were standing in the queue, Bullet Thornton, Circus China, fellow called Frank Gorman, and he got killed in a car crash. Ollie Henry, James O'Board, Dave Carr. But the fact that John Peel was going to play the records at us, Public, Pill was supposed to play it, but they never, there was some blizzard and they couldn't get across. The Beacons were supposed to play it, the Gang of Four was supposed to play it, but they couldn't get them across. But the Virgin Prunes played at it, Berlin played at it, and there's a band called the Nun Atrix, they played at it. It was just brilliant. By about 4 o'clock, I'd say everybody was gone, everybody was asleep, and people were going home.
But we still had music playing.
There was still, there was a DJ playing, all the bands had finished playing, but there was still music happening. Then.
So she stayed there for multiple hours.
We couldn't go home, because we had to wait for the next train to get home. That was the deal. But we all, I went to see Stiffton and Fingers and McGonagall's, and we slept rough, because we could, once you went up, it was a late night gig, and it was,
there was no train,
but we stayed, we broke into Fondly, got into Fondly Station, and we stayed there until the next morning. Most of what I remember, standing at the front, and just a band, or, just launching into a song, and you just think, anything is possible, anything.
Disco. Now, we were too young to get in. We used to go down, hang around outside, watch the guy bringing in the sound equipment, which was only like 2 turntables, connected up to speakers. And I think the power that was maybe 50 watts each side, so it's 100 watts of power. And he had some kind of strange lights. They used to black out all the big long windows, and they'd black out all the windows, and he had these lights that kind of just went round the room all night. Do you know what I mean? Nothing spectacular, but they look great. I think they were a kind of astronauts or something floating around in a fucking kind of galaxy. In my memory, maybe I'm just inventing that, but that's what it used to seem like to me. So we'd watch him set that up, and we watched the lads all turn up in the like DIY punk gear. And what I really noticed about back then was these two brothers who lived near me, Circus and Zip. Now, they were a few years older than me. They were like 5, 6, 7 years older. And they had these lovely long brown leather coats. They were really, really tasty. And, you know, being a 9-year-old kid, watching them come back and forth around the neighbourhood, they'd wear these resplendent brown leather coats, and they looked the business, you know. A bit like mafioso dons in them or something, you know, with the kind of wide lapel, double-breasted, and you could button it. Lovely for winter time. So I remember I always admired these lovely brown leather coats, knee-length, yeah. And then Zip comes along to the hop one night. Very early, as I said, all of a sudden they're wearing tight trousers, modified clothing, the works, shorts with markers, and this was like so really defacing your whole self, like, you know.
It's the same jacket, was it?
Yeah. And he had the same jacket, but he had modified it. He'd cut, there used to be a little belt on the sewn into the jacket, and he'd cut it just below the belt, which was on the waist, and now it was a brilliant. Before then it was a knee-length coat, now it had been transformed, metamorphed into a brilliant looking jacket, and on the back of it he had painted the stride. And I thought, wow, this, that's fucking ingenious. So I really got into this idea that you could start reinventing stuff, you could start doing stuff, you could, you know. And so that's just one of the things that he was doing. Other people come along dressed in boiler suits with slogans written on the back of it. But I remember it was very daring to walk out of your house and walk down the street with this short hair. Eye makeup and stuff, and the hair kind of cropped up and bleached, like kind of piss yellow colours and stuff, and you're thinking, they look like they've gone insane, do you know what I mean? But it really appealed to me because I thought, this looks fucking great, this is really exciting, you know. And the reaction that I got was like, it looked like some kind of awakening, spiritual awakening, do you know what I mean? And it was like that for me, because I thought, wow, before that was just a 9-year-old kid, and after that was like, it was like I kind of suddenly grew up or grew into something much bigger than where I come from, you know. So we used to sneak into the hop, yeah. We go along and hang around and talk. We have to get in there, do you know what I mean? See what's happening when they get in, you know. So there was no way they were going to let us in, 9-year-old kids staying out that late with no parents or anything like that, you know, to supervise them. So where the building was, there was a basement in the building, and there was a door into the basement. And the basement happened to be just below a kitchen area in the hall. And in this place, I remember noticing there was a hatch door underneath a big table. So I walked out to take the lock off the door, open the door, get into the basement. And before anybody would come to set up on Tuesday night, myself and two others, one of them was Bull Thornton's brother, and the other one would have been Zip Trainer's younger brother. And we used to sneak in, get up through the hatch door, move the hatch over, climb in, sneak in, and we'd hide in the room beside it. Yeah. So one of the lads would hide in like a wardrobe cupboard. The other one would hide in the cupboard at a press underneath a sink or something. And I'd hide, there was a window, like a big long window, and in front of it was a blackboard. And I'd hide standing on the radiator behind the blackboard so that nobody could see my legs until there was nothing behind it. And we'd hide in there, and we'd probably be there for maybe an hour. And then they'd come in, they'd set up all the equipment, the lights would go down, we'd hear the music. And when we'd be in there at times, people would come into the room, they'd be looking for stuff, and we'd be as quiet as mice, not making a fucking sound, do you know what I mean? So that, and we'd done this 8 or 9 times, like I never got caught, like, you know. And if you multiply that 8 or 9, 15 pence, as I saved a fortune. So we'd do that, and then when the music would come on, we'd know it was time and the lights were down. And what we do is we go out the door, and where the door was on the left, there was a whole row of chairs right down one side of the hall, and the whole row, the other, typical Irish dance hall kind of set up, boys on one side, girls on the other, you know. And we'd come out, open the door, and we'd crawl down underneath the chairs, and get down to where like the local punks were. And then we joined them and just sit around them, you know, and that was it. Nobody was going to come in because the people who were running the place, there was no bouncers. There was nobody kind of walking around with their hands behind the back, you know, in fucking Gestapo uniform. There was none of that, like, you know, there was no drinking at it. Everyone would get drunk beforehand, well, all the others. And then they'd come in and they'd just jump around and whatever, you know. But as I said, these were the early days of punk. The lads would come along in the DIY stuff. And they'd be bringing their own records, whatever records they have. And it was in that hole. And the first place that I ever heard, say, White Riot by The Clash. The heads I remember going back then, there were Bullet Taunton, Circus Turner, Zip Turner, Sherby. There'd be a few other lads from up around Marion Park who were really into punk, but, and that's another thing about punk, you'd have a lot of punks that wouldn't necessarily dress up. They'd be into it, but they wouldn't. They'd be courageous enough and they would have a passion for liking the music. But as I said, it took a lot of fucking bravery, a lot of courage, a lot of guts to walk out of your house dressed like that. You'd be confronted by people in the street, like, you know, I mean, fucking stay here, what the fuck are you at? Your parents should be disgusted, but your parents, you know, and you get that, you know. Later on, when I got into punk heavier and started dressing, yeah, I got that for years, you know what I mean, off people and stuff. So that's what I'm saying, there'll be a lot of other people coming up from around Marion Park. Well, when I say a lot, I mean, I suppose the population of punk rockers that would visit then, the early days, might have been maybe 12. You know, the lads I mentioned. There'd be a few other from the other side of town. There was a guy called John Dunn, and his nickname was Hitler Dunn. You know, not because he was a Nazi or anything. Apparently he was just well-versed in Third Reich history, you know. And he's dead now as well. So was Zip Turner. There's a good lot of them now that are, yeah. They died young, like. So that was that, and the lads would bring their own records. Not that there were many records released then, you know, because it was the early days of punk, and maybe you had stuff out by the Pistols, a few records by the Damned, and the Clash had just released their early stuff, like. So one night we were down in the hall, and they put this record just came blasting out of the speakers, and it was White Riot. And I remember kind of just walking around the place, not doing anything in particular, kind of just checking people out and stuff as a night. And this record came exploding out of the speakers, and I turned around and thought, what the fuck is that? Now, you have to understand, I was only 9, 10 years of age, and nothing like that was ever around before. Nothing as outrageous or as kind of anarchic or discordant.
First band we'd ever gigged was, we were called Vermin, and then we were called KSAD.
Okay.
And we practiced in the boys' club in Yalabatter. It was like it's kind of youth place up in Yalabatter. And had a couple of tapes of practices. That was it.
Never gigged.
The next band was Croodensnoid. And that was the first band I drummed in. So
yeah.
There was a place called the Stables down the back lanes where there was like basically free practicing. We might have had to throw a couple of quid in for the electric.
Right.
But it was run by the priests, the Augustinians, yeah. From the church house, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So that was great. I mean, we took her to practice.
Let's go.
everyone wrote letters, and it was all letter writing, like, you know, corresponding, and it was all the gigs were run through that to organise the gigs.
Yeah.
And there's a lad called Shane Hollywood from Belfast. He was the original singer for the Pink Tours. He was great because we kind of befriended him, and we do gigs up there, and we put the odd gig on in Drogheda. We did a gig in McPhail's about 86, 87, and then a place called the Garden Restaurant, Pink Tours. And anytime there was a gig like that, there'd be a couple of van loads coming out from Belfast. Just basically a big party. We'd have flattened Dyer Street, you know. It's good.
Just outside of the big smoke earlier.
Yeah, I mean, we play in Dublin, but it was kind of, I don't know, we always seemed to warm more towards Belfast at the time.
Hello, it's Monday morning, it's 8:45, this is Edmunds for The Breakfast Show. And if you're rushing off to work, you're a stupid fucking jerk.
Lad Shane, who's the singer, Pink Tours, the original singer, him and his partner left the city and bought a barrel top wagon and horses, and he did kind of like the hippie traveller thing.
Yeah.
But like, there'd be some days there'd be a barrel top in the middle of an estate in Drogheda and two horses grazing in the front garden and a lot of people sitting there drinking. It was kind of the locals would be like, oh, what the fuck.
Snyder, kind of the last straw of the band that you were in then?
Yeah,
is it Ugas?
We're all from Drogheda, bass player's from Belfast. Well, he's from Bray, but he lives in Belfast.
Okay.
Greg, who plays in Ugas, me and him used to jam. We had a band called Relapse. Yeah, we did a gig in the White Horse Pub on the Keys. Opposite Tara Street side, Los Crudos played, that band Los Crudos, played with them. And we did a gig in the City Arts Centre, Project Centre or whatever.
Yeah.
So we did a few gigs. We did a Punks, I sent you a flyer, that was 96. We played up in McHugh's with Ex-Cathedra from Scotland. And
did you organise that yourselves?
Yeah. So there was a good fucking load of people at that time. We had a Punks picnic in the park over the other side of the river. And yeah, it was a great day. It was fucking packed. It was like, up in the pub. It was like, really good.
Going really good bands and
a lot of people like travelled from Dublin and Belfast. Somebody actually cycled from Dublin